Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We're live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios, and you can tune into 102.5 and 106.3, The Game, this Saturday at 2:30 p.m. for our college football game of the week, Vanderbilt against Tennessee, presented by Twin Peaks. Take your tailgate to Twin Peaks for scenic views of all of the hottest college football games across the country and home of the 29 degree beer. Joining us now is Mitch Light, who covers college football for The Athletic. Mitch, always appreciate our weekly sit downs with you. So Tennessee falls to Georgia, gets whooped by Georgia this past weekend. Now the ceiling for the Tennessee Volunteers, assuming they take care of business against Vanderbilt this weekend, which I'm not going to jump to conclusions with you two Vandy grads, but the ceiling for this team is 8-4. How do you think Tennessee fans should feel about this season?
Good question. Probably what we could have or what we should have expected before the season. You know, obviously fans of their own of any team has, you know, usually have higher expectations than those from the outside looking in. With the loss that they had at the quarterback position and the wide receivers, and then when Brew McCoy going down, I think you could say 8-4 is probably a fair assessment. But I always say not all 8-4 records are created equally, and not all 7-5 or whatever. That's why you can't just slight tangent when they say, oh, how many wins does a coach need to save his job? Well, again, you could go 7-5 and be really competitive, or go 7-5 and get blown out five times. So I think the troubling thing for Tennessee fans is losing to their rivals, losing to Florida, who turned out to be not very good, losing to Alabama, and then getting run off the field against Georgia, and then losing so handily to a Missouri team that, quite frankly, they think they are better than, you know, as a program. And it is a better program, historically, no doubt about it. So I would say assuming they win this week, it's not the strongest 8-4. They didn't take care of business. They didn't assert themselves in big games. They won the games they're supposed to win for the most part and were, you know, alarmingly uncompetitive in their last two games.
Best win is what, against a Texas A&M team that fired their coach a few weeks later?
Yeah, or maybe at Kentucky, but probably at A&M, Kentucky. The way that Kentucky is struggling a little bit. Hey, Virginia's playing some pretty good ball now, actually. That 49-13 win. But
that looks pretty good.
Yeah, no, I mean, obviously, Virginia is not very good. They were not very good earlier in the year, but just if Tennessee fans have not been paying attention, Virginia is playing much better as the season progresses.
If you're Josh Heupel, do you play Nico? I'm not even going to attempt to say the last name, against Vanderbilt.
I don't start him. I mean, I would let Joe Milton finish the year there. I mean, you could argue that might not matter who starts in that game. Sure, get him in there, but I would not say, oh, let's look to the future. I think you have such a long off season, and he has played some snaps. I don't think, you know, putting him in one game necessarily prepares him better for the off season. Now, coach could be listening to this and say, you know, that's dumb. You know, anytime you get the more action you get, the better. Yeah, I get that. Get him in some. But I don't see any reason not to start Joe Milton in this final home game.
Now, Mitch, do you think that game with Georgia and Tennessee, do you think that was a statement game for Georgia? Because there still was many that felt Georgia, you know, they don't have the quarterback. The team's not the same. The quarterback isn't as good as what they've had the last two seasons. Let's just say that. They haven't really played anyone. But if you look at their schedule, they beat Kentucky, who then was ranked 20th. They beat them. They blew them out, 51-13. They beat Missouri, a good Missouri team. They beat a good Ole Miss team. They raked them through the cold. And then there was still this, we don't know about Georgia. But then they come back, and they basically manhandles Tennessee.
Yeah, I mean, Derek, I do think they made a statement. I think they are, you know, Kirby Smart's master motivator. He's found a way in the latter half of the season to get his team ready to play every game. And I'm looking at their season right now. They have not given up more than 21 points in a game. That's pretty impressive. They gave 21 to UAB and then 21 to Missouri. Their last two games, you know, beat Ole Miss 52-17. And, you know, I know Tennessee's struggling on offense because that's a program that knows how to score some points. Basically give up, a 75-yard touchdown run on the first play of the game and then nothing more is quite impressive. And I think this could matter. Now, you can make the argument that it doesn't matter because if they win the SEC championship, they could win every game by 1 point and they'd still make the playoff. But there are a lot of weird scenarios. Let's say they lose to Alabama in the SEC championship game. You know, right now we can sit here and say, you know, would they make it? Maybe not. But the more impressive they are in all of these games, you know, that increases their chances. That improves their resume. So there's a lot of reasons why Kirby Smart wants his team to play well. And I give him credit because he's pushing the right buttons at the right time. You know, they get Georgia Tech this week on the road. You'd expect they'd win that game. And then, you know, it's SEC championship game. So I'd be shocked if they don't make the college football playoff the way they're playing.
Now, speaking of the college football playoffs, the rankings come out again today. Do you see, and this is the first time that I got an opportunity to watch Washington play a whole game. I know the conditions were bad, which caused it to be a low-scoring game. But Penix showed me why he is a Heisman Trophy candidate. He stayed with the course, and he delivered some really good passes, tough passes toward the end of the game to put them in a position to win. But do you see them jumping over Florida State, considering, you know, Florida State lost their quarterback for the year?
That's a great debate, and one that we'll really find out more, you know, after if we see Florida State play the next few weeks without Jordan Travis. You know, the one thing about the committee is we kind of treat it as one vote, and it ends up being one vote, but you got a lot of people in there with different opinions. There's some coaches and people in there who say, well, you know what, we're not going to ding Florida State yet because we haven't seen them play a game with a full game without their quarterback. And there's some who will be like, well, I'm going to ding them because they're clearly not the same team. It doesn't really matter now. We'll find, you know, if they play well enough and win these two games with backup quarterback, Rademacher, I think his name is, then they'll probably be in the playoffs. But to your Washington point, you know, looking at their schedule, they have been playing with fire, no doubt about it. They're not blowing teams out like they were earlier in the season, but they keep winning, and that's the name of the game. And I don't think, you know, a lot of us, you know, especially here in SEC country, we can't really appreciate how difficult it is to win in Corvallis. Oregon State is a very good team. They play very well at home. So I wouldn't look at that score and be like, oh, 22-20, you know, they're not playing well. You know, and again, we're going to find out. If they're going to play Oregon in a couple of weeks probably. If they win that game, they'll make the college football playoffs. If they don't, they won't, and these close wins won't really matter.
I second the motion. I got a chance to see that game too, guys, and it was a driving rain the entire game. But I got to give the Oregon State fans credit; they stood in there. Nobody left. You know, they had the ponchos on, but they were there the entire game.
They went right down. They love it. They love it.
Oh yeah, I guess they're just like whatever. This is what happens here, and this is a big game, so we're digging in. But that was a clutch road win for Washington. All right, Mitch, let's look at the big one. Michigan, Ohio State. Michigan looked kind of blah against Maryland. Had a little trouble there. It got a little hairy. So how do you look at the matchup here?
Yeah, fascinated by it for all the reasons. I mean, everyone can have a different opinion. And, you know, obviously, you know, my dad went to the University of Alabama. I grew up an Alabama fan, really appreciate the Alabama-Auburn rivalry, but I think I will always say that Michigan-Ohio State's the best rivalry in college football. You know, Army-Navy's on a separate plane. That's a separate deal. I love that game, but I think Ohio State-Michigan's the best rivalry in college football. And the fact that it has been elevated the last few years because of Michigan's emergence and then now all the controversy this year, I can't wait to watch it. I think it's going to be really interesting to see, you know, J.J. McCarthy in this game. He's been just cruising along, hasn't really been under much pressure this year. You know, some early Heisman buzz there. Another side story, you know, he grew up a huge Ohio State fan, was out of Philadelphia, I believe, was not recruited by Ohio State. Interestingly, the Penn State quarterback and the Michigan quarterback grew up Ohio State fans, weren't really recruited by either school. That's a side story there. So all along I thought Michigan. But I think I'm going Ohio State. You know, I can still change my mind later in the week. I think Ohio State's defense is undervalued. I don't think people realize, because they've struggled so much the last couple of years, that Jim Knowles and the second year's coordinator, they planned really well. You remember last year, it wasn't Michigan driving the ball up and down the field. It's the big plays and the running game mostly. And Ohio State's done a better job limiting those big plays. So, you know, conversely, Ohio State's not nearly as explosive as they were last year. So it's not like you can just guarantee they're going to score 30 points. So I can't wait to watch the game. My prediction right now would be Ohio State, and I think it's their defense against Michigan's offense that really is lacking, you know, the big plays this year, or big plays in the passing game, could be the difference. But, you know, obviously nothing would surprise me in this one.
Here's a question you may not know the answer to, but and obviously
you're not supposed to ask this a question you don't know the answer to, Willie.
Right. But I am going to try to take a dig at Michigan because they have plenty of experience with what I'm going to what I'm about to ask you, and that is, what does Jim Harbaugh do during the game? What is he allowed to do? What's he supposed to be allowed to do? Because we're all wondering what kind of factor it's going to be with him not being on the sideline. But they've done this, what, five times already this year?
Well, earlier in the year, when the weather was nice, I think he said he went to some of his son's games. You know, I don't know what sport, and I don't know how old his kids are. I think he said he mowed the lawn and all this. But, you know, I don't think it's lawn mowing weather up in Ann Arbor. My guess is he's going to be at home on the couch, watching with his family, if he can stand to watch. I'm sure that's would be nerve wracking there, but he's not allowed in the complex or anything like that. I don't know what the deal is there, like with their football offices. I guess if they're not attached to the stadium, I don't know, is he allowed at the football, at his football office? I don't know, but will not be there. And that will obviously be one of the key storylines of the game. Now, he doesn't call plays, so it's not as big of a deal at other schools with other head coaches there. But, yeah, we would be fun to have a Harbaugh cam sitting here watching him react to every play.
Well, I think based on his track record, they should have a Harbaugh cam just to make sure he's not texting people or, you know, have some kind of interesting communication
Willie?
System.
I don't know
what you're saying, Willie.
He's a cheater.
I'm confused.
He's a cheater.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Well, Michigan doesn't have enough resources or buy-in, Willie. They have to cheat to try and remain competitive.
They don't have the millions upon millions of dollars.
They're just a rinky-dink little program trying to make it in this world. I mean, my goodness.
Exactly.
Now, Mitch, you said you've switched to Ohio State. But you do have the leeway to switch back if you so choose before the game. But did the second half of that Maryland game concern you? Because to me, whatever Maryland did in that second half, and I'm not going to even let Michigan off the hook and say, well, they probably was thinking about Ohio State. No, that Maryland team buckled down defensively and made it very hard for JJ and for Corum running the football. I think he ended up with 94 yards, but that was a tough 94 yards for him.
Yes and no. I mean, I try not to read too much into any, you know, one half of football. I didn't see that game, but I know what happened. I looked at the box score. I think sometimes, you know, as you know, when you get a lead in the game and, you know, then you kind of play close to the vest, you know, I know. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Maryland had the ball a couple times with a chance to take the lead, but never really in position. Like, that was at their own 20s. Like, you never really thought Michigan was going to lose that game. Of course, if you're a Michigan fan, you'd like to see them, you know, take the lead, blow them out, no doubt about it. But, I mean, you know, Maryland's a pretty good offensive team. You know, going to Maryland there, you know, just escaping with the wins enough there. So, you know, never really got the impression that Michigan was in real danger in that game. But, you know, it's kind of a thing. You know, Michigan's put up some gaudy numbers this year, but they have not been, you know, severely tested. The one game they played against the marquee defense, they did enough to win in Penn State. But I don't think you walked away from that game saying, wow, I've got confidence in this team that if it needs to drive the field to win a game, they can do it against the elite defense. And I think Ohio State's defense is every bit as good as Penn State's.
Mitch, over the weekend, it was announced by Arkansas's athletic director that they would retain Sam Pittman at least for another year. Now, I know a lot of Arkansas fans were not very pleased to hear that announcement. I think a lot of Arkansas fans were hoping that it was Jimbo Fisher 1, Zach Arnett 2, Sam Pittman 3. Obviously, Arkansas season did not go according to how they expected it to, but do you think that was the right decision to hold on to Sam Pittman for now?
From the outside looking in, I would say yes. But we don't, you always don't know. It's kind of dangerous for us that we don't know what's going on. You know, Sam Pittman seems like the greatest guy in the world. Like everyone roots for him.
He really
we don't know
does.
Again, like we don't want anyone to get, well, we want some people to get fired, but you know what I'm saying? We want good things to happen to Sam Pittman, but we don't know what's going on behind the scenes. You don't know what happened, you know, with the coordinator, you know, I know he got fired and all that. So I always hesitate to say teams should do this or shouldn't do this. What I believe to be the case, and I might have been David Ubbin, one of our writers, was talking to some coaches. I heard him on a podcast saying, you know, we can watch it with our own eyes. But the feeling around college football around the SEC is the talent level at Arkansas has really just dipped in the past few years. And you heard Sam Pittman in that press conference, and he was saying, you know, this is killing recruiting. You know, this just all this rumors, and they've had several decommitments so far this year. So if you're an athletic director, if you're Hunter Yurecek, you might look at it and say, you know what, Sam Pittman's done some good things here. He's a great guy. But talent level's down. We struggled this year. How many times when you give a guy an extra year do they turn it around? I mean, you'd have to go back and look, but usually when you're in this situation, it doesn't end well. So I wouldn't have been surprised if they would have pulled the plug there, but I guess my big picture look would be say, yes, I think Sam Pittman deserved another year.
Now there are
– All right. Sorry,
D-Mace. No, go ahead, Will.
Okay, because here's one. We've got to have some fun with this because for years, Mitch – this goes back to when Chase was part of the show here, and Chase would always get after Mitch. Mitch, they're going to fire Jimbo Fisher. And Mitch would come back and say, do you know how much money they would owe Jimbo Fisher if they fired him? And here we are. So Chase was a year early, but here are the numbers. And Mitch, correct me if I'm wrong here. When they fired Jimbo Fisher, he immediately got a check for $27 million. $27 million. He gets another $12 million in 60 days. Just a little small check for $12 million in 60 days. Just,
in case he blew through all the rest of it.
Yeah, just in case. And then $7.26 million for the next 5 years. That's a lot of money. Good
so
God.
Are you trying to make me look bad, Willie? This is not a good... You know, I'm a guest on your show. You're supposed to make me look smart, not make me look bad. No, you didn't need to bring that up. I mean, Chase, you know, whatever. So Chase was right, okay? Now, it's a staggering amount of money, and at some point you just look at the situation and you say it's not going to work. And I was completely wrong about Texas A&M this year. I thought they would be better. I liked bringing in Bobby Petrino. You know, it hurt that Connor Wegman got hurt. You know, not that he was lighting it up, having this great year, but he's a really talented kid, and you would have liked to see him in that offense with all the talent they have there. But it clearly wasn't working, and there's very few schools, maybe A&M's the only one in the country, that can make that kind of financial commitment to pay a coach. Now, it's not necessarily...
Is that the biggest one ever? Is that the biggest buyout ever?
Oh, yeah.
Got it,
oh, yeah.
Right?
Gus Malzahn was the biggest one before that.
It was like 20.
Yeah, 20. So, no, I mean, this is like...
Shatters.
A lot more than that. Yeah, shattering it. So... Yeah, just and we'll see what they have to pay the next coach. And, you know, it's not, for the most part, it's not the university shelling out the money. It's the boosters, but it's all, but it comes from the huge same pot of oil, so to speak. So
in this case, especially.
Yes. So it's a staggering amount of money, and it's a good gig. If you're being a fired SEC coach, is a good gig if you can get it. And Jimbo Fisher is, you know, I'm sure he's bummed he didn't win at Texas A&M, but we don't need to shed any tears for Jimbo.
Well, he's going to be bummed walking out the door with a lot of money in his pocket. You just mentioned the you know, coaching in regards to A&M, and there are three teams here I want you to give your assessment of and who you think can potentially be their next head coach. Syracuse just fired Dino Babers after, yep, I think, 5 years, somewhere around there. Obviously, A&M and Michigan State, those three teams. Who do you think is the leading candidate, if there is any at this point in time, for those three programs?
Yeah, I mean, this is just speculation, just what I've heard, you know, mm-hmm, read and heard and stuff. With, you know, if they put me in charge of the search, I think Sean Lewis makes a lot of sense at Syracuse. He was the offensive coordinator there under Dino Babers, then went to become the head coach at Kent State. And then obviously we know what happened to him at Colorado. Goes to be Deion Sanders, offensive coordinator. You don't see that happen very often, the head coach leaving to become a coordinator, and then he gets demoted there, but he's still highly respected. So I think Sean Lewis makes a lot of sense there. I like Mike Elko for other opening jobs. I know he has no ties to Michigan State, but you know, Duke has struggled a little bit late in the year, but we all, you know, we've seen what he's done with that program. Most of the struggles were due to the quarterback, you know, Riley Leonard getting hurt there. So I think Mike Elko makes a lot of sense there. I thought Sean Lewis to Michigan State made sense earlier in the year when, you know, the Colorado offense was rolling and stuff like that. I, you know, not that his recent struggles make him less of a coach there. I just don't know how attractive he would be to Michigan State at this point. And, you know, Jamie Chadwell is a guy that, you know, we came onto the scene at Coastal Carolina, and he goes, you know, we all thought he's maybe earmarked for our ticketed for a bigger job, a Power 5 job, and he never really got one. Then he goes to Liberty, and I think they're 10-0 or 11-0. You know, could he be a fit at Mississippi State? The one knock on Chadwell is you look at his resume, not one season at a Power 5 school, even as a coordinator, or position coach, never recruited at a Power 5 level. To me, that's not a huge red flag. I like going to his Wikipedia page and looking at his wins and losses, and the guy just wins a ton of games there. So I've heard his name at Mississippi State. I have no idea what the interest there is, but seems to be a pretty good candidate pool this year of head coaches.
Any other openings you think will happen as the college football season winds down?
You know, UCLA was rumored, but, you know, after they had their really impressive win against USC, I think I would say Chip Kelly's in good shape there. At Arizona, I'm drawing a blank on his name. He's done a great job, former NFL assistant. But, you know, they are 7-3 right now. You guys remember their headlines a couple weeks ago about how Arizona is like $250 million in the hole for the accounting issues. I've heard that he is not pleased with that. Obviously, I can understand that if you're the head coach there. I can't think of his name.
Jed Fish. Really.
Yes, Jed Fish. Thank you very much. So not saying obviously he'd be fired, but he's one of those guys where I wouldn't be shocked if he made a move. You know, Michigan State, I haven't heard that, but Fish has been all over the place. He's an assistant in Minnesota, I know, so he's been in the Big Ten there. So, you know, off the top of my head, I can't, you know, think of anything. You know, Northwestern looked like it was going to be open, but they hired Braun, the interim coach there, and the ones that have made a move, like Syracuse. So, you know, off the top of my head, I can't think of anything. I'm probably missing one, but can't think of anything else.
Last one for you, Mitch, quickly. Did Lincoln Riley have the most disappointing coaching job this season?
I think that's fair. Based on what they, you know, what they did last year. I mean, their season ended poorly last year with the loss to Utah and a loss to Tulane, but they still had a good year. And they did a pretty good job in the portal bringing some defensive guys in, you know, upgrading the talent. Like last year, their problem was lack of talent. This year, they were just bad on defense. But for them to lose – what they're going to finish 7-5. Their last two games were the last two games they won were Arizona in overtime and Cal 51-49 or 51-50, whatever it was when Cal missed a 2-point conversion. They could have, you know, this could have been a 5-7 team. And it's not often you get a quarterback like Caleb Williams. I mean, he is a generational talent. It's no doubt about it. One of the most disappointing jobs. I'd have to look around the landscape, Caroline, but I think over the last 5 years of college football, this USC team with the talent they had on offense to finish 7-5. Now let's give the Pac-12 credit. It's a better Pac-12 than we're used to seeing, but hey, they went to Notre Dame and got run off the field by a good but not great Notre Dame team. So I'm right there with you. That was not a good job by Lincoln Riley this year.
Not a great job by Lincoln Riley at all. Mitch Light of The Athletic. Mitch, appreciate you as always. Happy Thanksgiving to you and your family. We'll chat with you soon.
All right, guys. Take care.
All right. Appreciate it. All right. Coming up next, I will ask callers, texters, listeners, D. Mace and Willie the question that I asked Mitch Light. How should Tennessee fans feel about the ceiling of an 8-4 season, assuming they beat Vanderbilt this weekend? We'll get into that coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, we're brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet. And also tomorrow, it's your chance to participate in Preds Pick to Click. If you guess correctly a Preds player that scores a goal in the Preds game tomorrow night, then you will win a pair of tickets to an upcoming Predators home game. Participate with Robbie and Rex Road tomorrow morning at 8:45 a.m. Pick to Click brought to you by TJ Anderson Homes of Benchmark Realty. List your home with TJ to get your home seen, heard, and sold.